everyone. My name is Julia Cardoso, and you're listening to Anxious Ramblings. Here we're going to speak about all the crazy thoughts in your head that you're afraid to say out loud. So for this episode, I like to do a segment of Ask Julia. So I basically ask people on Tumblr to send me any questions they might want advice from someone who suffers from anxiety disorder, who may have been through similar circumstances. And I chose like about five questions that I decided were good topics just to give my input on based on my personal experiences. And these are, like I said, just my personal experiences. This is not any medical advice or anything that I'm telling you that you should do. These are just things that worked for me, and I'm going to go ahead and dive into the questions. So the first question is, what is the difference? The first question, someone said, "Hey, Julia, I get really bad anxiety during exams and tests. I start to shake, my heart beats a lot, and I think I'm suffering from anxiety disorder. What is the difference between an anxiety disorder and just normal anxiety?" And first of all, I like to say that everyone has anxiety. Anxiety is something that is part of our human characteristics. If you are feeling a little scared or overwhelmed or nervous, you're going to get those anxious feelings. And in areas such as test or something that is unexpected or something that you're not ready for, you're going to feel those anxious feelings. You're going to get those sensations that people with anxiety disorders get. But the main difference is that people with anxiety disorders get those on a daily basis, or get those with things that they shouldn't get anxiety over. Like for example, I was walking across the street and I just felt anxious for no reason. And someone who gets anxious only during circumstances such as tests or public speaking may not have an anxiety disorder, because those are normal situations where people normally get anxiety over. But if you're anxious throughout the day with no real apparent danger or no real reason to be anxious, like you're not doing a test, you're just home, or you are just riding the bus, those things are real to you. But in everyday circumstances, those are part of abnormal anxieties instead of normal anxieties. So I definitely think that's something worth talking to your doctor with, because you may not know. It could be an anxiety disorder. And also, it may help if you write down what triggers the anxiety, like which circumstances give you the most anxiety, which circumstances you don't have as much anxiety in. That way you can see, okay, this is what triggers me, this is what I'm comfortable in. And that way you can really assess, like, is this something that's going to need further treatment with, or is this something that I'm just going to need to deal with, such as need to work on my public speaking or need to work on preparing for quizzes and tests better. So that's how I would look at that situation. Someone else asked me if I have any advice on handling social life with a mental illness. This is something that I'm currently struggling with now, and it's been a daily struggle because my friends just want to go out all the time, and sometimes it gets to a point where it's like you don't want to always say no, but at the same time, you want to be conscious of what you're dealing with on an internal level as well. And I think the best way to deal with that is to find balance. Find balances between having a social life that your friends want you to be a part of and having a social life that you want to be involved in with your own self. And I think one main thing that can help with relieving some of the anxiety involved with that is to go somewhere you're comfortable. Maybe go to a friend's house or a restaurant that you guys all been to before, somewhere that you know the situation, you know the environment, you're pretty comfortable with, and that will be really helpful for you to stay a little more calm, and it will enable you to hopefully enjoy the night. And also, I say to speak your mind. If you really do not feel like going somewhere one day, just don't go, and you know, tell them that this is not going to be a good time for you and that you guys can reschedule. Just letting them know exactly how you feel. Because the more you keep, like, shying away and not telling them, they're going to think, oh, maybe she doesn't want to hang out with me anymore, he doesn't want to hang out with me anymore. But that's not the case. You just have this issue that's enabling you from being as social as you want to be. And I just want you to know that it's okay to say no. I do it all the time. And it's okay to just, you know, take a break for yourself. And if you don't feel like going out, you don't have to. Another question was, hey, Julia, I'm having a really hard time with being in school right now. And I was wondering if you have any advice on being in school while having severe anxiety. As you guys know, I just graduated from college in December. And being in college was one of the most stressful and anxiety-provoking situations that I was in. And I feel like one thing that definitely helped me was asking for help. I went to my professors. I went to the counseling center. The counseling center can give you a therapist that you can see once a week. They can provide you with resources that are outside of campus. They can... they do workshops such as stress release workshops or, you know, drop-in hours during finals and midterm weeks. So I feel like the counseling center, asking for help, speaking to your professors can be really great steps to helping the semester go off well. And also another place that is great help is the disability center. And I don't know about any other schools, but at my school they can... give you extensions on papers, tests. If you want to take your exams in a separate location where it's more quiet and less people, you can do that. They can give you a whole bunch of accommodations with like absences and anything that you may need to help the semester go along more smoothly. And also another thing that helped me was to find a comfortable spot on campus where, okay, this is where I'm going to go to relax. And it was always in the library. There was just one couch upstairs. And every time that I was feeling a little too overwhelmed and I had a break between classes, I would just go in there to regroup to really just calm myself down and to prepare for the rest of the school day. And finding that spot on campus is really going to help to just, you know, that's going to be your zone where you're going to go in and just relax and gather yourself. So that's something that can help as well. Also, I want to say another thing that can help you with the severe anxiety is to not to take on too much. If you feel like, you know, you're involved in too much or you're taking way too many classes, it's okay to cut down. It's okay. There's no rush until when you're going to finish school. Like, this is your own journey with college, high school, wherever you're in. And don't ever feel like you have to compare yourself to others or, you know, you have to do things a certain way. This is you, and you can do it any way you want. And if you need to, you know, take one less class or, you know, drop a club, it's going to be okay. And I feel like if you need to do that, go ahead and do that. And don't feel pressured and don't feel worried about what anyone's going to think. Okay, so someone else asked me, how do you deal with the physical symptom of anxiety and depression? So, I feel like this is a tough one too, because for me, I feel like I suffer a lot with like health anxiety. So like physical symptoms such as, you know, heart palpitations, especially the heart palpitations, nausea, you know, headaches, dizziness, those things make me have more anxiety. And I feel like it's really finding a balance between exposure, which is just like, you know, letting it just happen and kind of riding with it, and also a bit of distractions, finding some healthy distractions such as focusing on your breath or doing something that's going to keep you busy while you have those physical sensations. When the nausea was something that was really bad for me, and I found that, you know, drinking a lot of water or ginger ale really helped settle it, but it was inevitable. Anytime I felt like I knew I had to leave the house, I would get that. And honestly, the thing that I did was just ride with it, just let them happen and tell yourself that it's okay. This is just your anxiety speaking. Tell your anxiety that you're fine, you're safe, and that it can go away now. Those feelings are not going to hurt you, and you know that in a little while it's going to be okay. It's going to go away. So that's how I kind of internalize it, and that's how I dealt with it in my mind. Like, I'm just telling myself, okay, it's just anxiety. It's just anxiety. You know, in a few minutes, it's going to go away. And that's kind of how I dealt with it. Someone else asked me to talk about my experience being on Zoloft. I don't know if I don't think I said this on the podcast, but I think in November, decided to give the medication a try. And I've always said that I wasn't going to be on medication, and I was totally against it, and it's not going to work, blah, blah, blah. And I felt like during that time, I reached a really low point, and I really needed to try that. So the first time I took my Zoloft, I was on 25 milliliters. Let me check. I still have it. I actually stopped taking it, but let me start from the beginning. So I was on 25 milligram tablets, and it's actually, sorry, it was Cetraline. And first time I took it, went to class. On the bus on the way to class, I was like, oh, my stomach started to hurt. I was like getting a little nauseous. I'm like, oh my God, is it the Zoloft? This kind of continued for, you know, the rest of the week. Any little thing, I'm like, oh my God, is it the Zoloft? Is it my anxiety? I couldn't keep track of which one, what was happening. So the plan for the Zoloft, I believe, I got it from my primary care provider, and I believe I was supposed to take it for 2 weeks or 3 weeks, the half pill, so 25 milligrams, and then I would take the whole thing once the doctor told me to. But I was communicating with my doctor through email, and, you know, I just forgot. I just kept taking half the pill, and I took half a pill for 5 weeks. And I felt nothing, no side effects. I felt like maybe I was a little nauseous in the beginning, so I was taking it at night, which helped. Some nights I would wake up at like 4 in the morning, but it happened like 3 times. And I believe if I, you know, maybe listen to the doctor and increase my dose, that it would have helped, or maybe I would have felt something different. But I was so not into the fact that I was on medication that I wasn't really committed to it. And I think that's really important. If you're going to try something, you really have to commit to get the real benefits from it. And I'm such a hypocrite because I didn't do that. But I feel like if I did, maybe I would have gotten better results. And if I do try again in the future, I'm definitely going to really commit to it and not try unless I know I'm going to be able to do it the right way. And like I said, no really bad side effects, no difference in my anxiety. So it was really not as effective, I guess. But then again, I didn't follow it the right way, so I can't, I'm not a good judge for this. But I'm open to trying things in the future if I have to. Like, I'm not totally closed off to it, but for now, I'm going to continue to go down the natural route again, which is taking my supplements, exercising, drinking tea, yoga, meditation, all that good stuff. So we'll see how it goes, though. Okay, so the last question I'm going to answer real quick is how to deal with people who are not supportive of you being out with your mental illness. One, I would say figure out who is supportive and who isn't, and you do not need people who are not supportive in your life. And if you do, if you have to have them in your life, then, you know, keep them at a certain length, set boundaries. You know, if you don't have, you don't have to talk about your mental illness with them if you don't want to, and you don't have to put up with their negativity, because it's really important to just have positive people in your life. And if you're gonna have someone who's gonna, you know, criticize you and you know, stigmatize you even further, then you don't really need that, and it's not gonna help. Also, you know, really embracing those who are supportive, that can really help with the people who aren't so supportive, because you're going to realize who is really there for you. That's all I have to say about that. Like, you know, just letting them know how you feel, like being upfront with them, telling them that, hey, this is not cool, this is something I'm dealing with, and you're really going to have to stop, you know, stop judging me, stop stigmatizing me. And yeah, that's about it. That's all the questions that I've had for today. Maybe I might do another segment. If you guys have any more questions for me, you can always email me at anxietysurvivor@gmail.com. Thanks. All right, so now I want you guys to hear an interview that I had with my buddy Sarah. And she's going to be talking about her personal discovery of anxiety disorder and some of the coping mechanisms that she uses to deal with her anxiety and her experience being a college student. And I hope you guys enjoy her story. So yeah, go ahead and introduce yourself to us.
Hello, my name is Sarah. I am a second year at Oberlin College. My major is psychology, and in my spare time, I'm a tutor for Boys and Girls Club and a freelance writer.
Great. And what is your current diagnosis?
I have generalized anxiety disorder and social anxiety disorder.
Okay. I also have generalized anxiety disorder. So when did you first realize you had a problem?
I'm pretty sure I've been having problems since I was 14, but I didn't really think of them as problems until I got to college. So my first year, I was just like, I hardly went out. I didn't really have any friends on campus. I was getting into a lot of stressful relationships online, and it was going to hell. So I tried to get help, but I got misdiagnosed my first year.
What did you get misdiagnosed with?
Panic disorder.
Okay. And while you were on campus, what steps did you take to cope with your mental illness, or what steps did you take towards trying to make yourself feel better?
Let's see. During this semester, I've been reading a lot of books on anxiety. I seriously pressed for a better therapist outside of the counseling center. I've just been telling people I know and care about and asking for some understanding, and that's been really helpful.
Okay, so the people around you have been supportive with you dealing with this?
I would say for the most part, yeah.
That's great. Have you experienced any stigma when you told people?
No, not really. I had a couple of friends who were, I don't think they fully got it, so they kind of did things that were counterproductive. Like, I don't know, they would pressure me to engage in conflict, or they would just kind of ask a lot of intrusive questions that made me feel uncomfortable because they wanted me to be more confrontational, but that just stressed me out more, so...
Yeah, I had a couple of friends who were like that, too. So I can relate with that also. How was the counseling center? Did you find them helpful there?
I'm going to say kind of. Like, I don't know, I felt like they were repeating, like, different... what's the word I'm looking for? I don't know, coping techniques. Like... And I have a good base of, like, coping techniques, and I felt like they were kind of rehashing that. Okay. And when I told them what the psychiatrist told me about my anxiety, like, I was diagnosed by the psychiatrist first, so I was like, well, are we going to talk about my problem, or are you just going to keep giving me coping techniques? And I don't know. I feel like they don't necessarily directly approach the problem. Even though they're all, like, qualified psychologists with PhDs, so...
Right.
I just had to go out in the community, and I needed somebody to look me in the face and be like, you do have these problems, but you're not crazy. It's okay.
Exactly.
That's what I got, so I was happy.
Yeah, I felt like that, too. Like, it was... The counseling center, it's very limiting, like... There's only so many times you can repeat the same thing. Like, he's always telling me breathing exercises. I'm like, I already know breathing exercises. I live by them. I know how to do them. Can we talk about something else now? Like,
right.
So I understand that also. I have a similar experience.
Have you gone out in the community and found somebody for you?
I haven't. I'm still looking for one now. It's been really frustrating with... insurance and coverage and all that BS. So
I hope you find
me. I know, me too. Hopefully soon. I'm just gonna I'm still searching, but I think I'm just gonna go to the counseling center until the semester is over, and then try to find someone that I can see more permanently.
That's a good idea.
Yeah. So Why do you think self-care is important for those with mental illnesses or just anyone in general?
I think in today's world, like the pressure to be productive and be economically feasible and all that good stuff, like I feel like the pressure gets more intense as we increasingly complicate our technology, because in this day and age it's more about like conquering things intellectually, which requires a lot more hard work than solely manual labor.
Right.
Not that manual labor isn't difficult. Oh gosh, that would turn into a whole separate rant about social justice. But for now, self-care is important to me because I get overwhelmed very easily. Like, I stress out mad over simple tasks sometimes, and it just feels like insurmountable mountain.
Right.
So it's like, I have to be good to myself, and I just need to have patience, and I have to understand that it's not always important to keep pushing yourself and, like, I don't know, produce these wonderful, fantastical results. Exactly. It's important that I'm happy myself.
That's great. And what are some self-care techniques that you use or that you would recommend to others?
I recommend that people pursue their hobbies. Like, when my one friend copes with depression, so like they like to draw a lot to help them out. Mm-hmm. For me, I like to write, or I like to read, maybe just kind of vent to my friends or play games on my phone. People with anxiety, breathing techniques are invaluable. They help me out, although I don't always use them, but I'm bad at that sometimes. Taking a walk, maybe like physically writing down your goals, just different things to take you out of your mind and do something you like, or something to remind you that it's okay and you don't always have to do something like hardcore and intense every day. Sometimes you just have to take it easy and do simple steps and be good to yourself.
Definitely, I would agree. And just having some personal me time, like just shutting everything down for a while and just doing things that you love, can definitely...
Oh, yeah. My friends think I'm weird because I stay in on Friday nights, and they all like to go to parties, but I'm like, I don't like people. So I'm gonna stay in and watch some Netflix and read some interesting articles and chill out.
That's what I did last night. All day Netflix, and I was reading this new book that I'm started to read, and I had a great night.
Good.
Right. So what would a good support system look like to you?
Alright, I'm gonna embarrass the hell out of my girlfriend and use her as the primary example, because she's like the epitome of what a good supportive person should be like. So I go to her with X problem, like, I'm kind of freaking out, I'm in a big crowd of people and I don't like this, I'm about to cry. And she just like, try to breathe, take some deep breaths, it's okay, I'm here for you. And she sends me lots of virtual cuddles and appreciation, and that usually calms me down. If I'm worrying in general, she tells me it's okay, that I can take a break, that I don't need to worry about it right this second. So, in general, I would say a good support system consists of people who understand your limitations, who are patient with you when you are hitting a wall, to say the least, who encourage you to be your best and just to take the steps that you can take that day, whether those are big steps or small steps. And above all else, they just support you and give you love regardless, and they don't stigmatize you or feel like you're insane for not being able to do something that would seem simple.
That's wonderful, and it's so nice of her to be so supportive of you and during this tough time. And I understand, like, and it's really hard. I think it's hard to be in a relationship sometimes when you have a mental illness.
Yeah.
Even if you are the person with a mental illness or not, it's just hard to deal with. So a good support system is definitely helpful. So that's great. What would a bad support system look like?
I think some bad support systems are just people who are trying to be supportive, but they're not coming from an informed enough place. So they're giving you these useless tips or advice that feels like it's like shaming you as the person with an illness, or having an illness, like, well, you can just get over it by now, you know, it's just like that kind of shit. Or, yeah, no, that's pretty much what a bad support system looks like to me.
Exactly, and I think I agree with that, and I think them kind of just educating themselves on these issues and what people actually go through, I mean, you're not going to really understand it by reading an article or anything, but just having a more general knowledge that it's like, not something that's going to go away, but it would help, you know?
Yeah. Like, I don't expect them to fully wrap their heads around it. Like, I can't fully wrap my head around depression or something, but I mean, when people tell me, like, well, I'm just not motivated to do anything, I'm just like, it's okay. You're doing great.
Exactly.
Just take some time to take care of yourself instead of like, well, shit, man, you gotta get up, walk that shit off,
right.
Get to work, do it.
Right. So I think the last question is, how do you think the mental health community can improve to better help people with mental illnesses?
Oh, stigma is definitely the biggest issue right now.
Yep.
Knowledge is power, as one can always say. So it's like, you know, just, I don't know, increasing information, spreading it out, helping people understand that this is not somebody's fault that they have this. And instead of like pinning it as like a personal failure of that person, promoting understanding and helping them and supporting them through this difficult diagnoses. Another issue I think they face would be, I don't know, last night I watched this weird-ass video talking about, like, how terrible psychiatry is and, like, blah, blah, some libertarian guy with this big-ass critique, and I just, I feel like these people are, like, slowing down the progress of psychiatry and psychology because they think that these guys are just like handing out pills to people to get them addicted to get money. And yeah, it is an issue of profit too, and those are other issues, but it's like there's more to it than just like profiting. And I don't know,
right?
I think there is another big issue. Like, okay, so I was talking to my advisor who was a therapist, and I told him I think it's definitely an issue with the prescription of like SSRIs in such a broad range, and that one thing the industry should probably refine is like giving it, I don't know, oh gosh, I'm trying to word this right, it's the way they prescribe it. Like, they prescribe it to increasingly younger people, they prescribe it to like a very broad range, and they need to refine that system and target people who really need help or people who are really willing to seek that out.
Right.
Because it's just, and they, in the future, I hope that they start to refine their diagnosis system and that they refine the pharmaceutical industry as well, so they give out, you know, more appropriate pills, so that people with, like, generalized anxiety get, like, I don't know, pills specifically meant to target generalized anxiety and not also meant to target depression and panic and PTSD and borderline and so on and so forth.
Exactly. Those are definitely some issues that need work. And I think another big one is the barriers to getting treatment, like,
yeah,
affordability and insurance and all that stuff that I'm dealing with now. So
I think, like, what is it, only like 40% of people who qualify for help usually get help,
right? I think I heard that too.
But it's also like people with, like, I don't know, personality disorders, they don't seek help as often, or there are certain people who can't perceive that they have such a problem don't get help. So it's
right.
Like, if we increase information to the people so they understand what to look for and how to understand mental illness better, they can get the people who aren't seeking help or are having a very difficult time getting help, get help.
Exactly. Thanks for doing this with me.
No problem. Thank you so much for letting me be a part of your podcast. I'm excited to see it come out.
So I want to say thank you, everyone, for helping me with this episode, my music composer Elise, all my Tumblr followers, and thank you, Sarah, for sharing your story with us. And you guys can follow me at Twitter at Anxious Survivor. You can email me at anxietysurvivor@gmail.com, and you can also check out my website for this podcast. All the podcasts will be on iTunes as well as on my website for free at anxiousrambling.squarespace.com. And I almost forgot, happy Valentine's Day!